supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott, sitting in for Dan Gottlieb today, but don't worry, Dan is not far. He is actually our guest today. Dan joins us to talk about his new book, Learning from the Heart, Lessons on Living, Loving, and Listening. Dr. Dan, welcome to the show.
It's funny, you said you're sitting in for Dan Gottlieb, who's sitting in over here on the other side of the table.
So we have switched places.
We're both sitting in. It's kind of a sit-in here.
So Dan, we're going to talk about your new book, Learning from the Heart. And I remember when you first started writing this book, you told me, this was going to be a book about what it means to be human. And I thought, now, what does that mean? What does that mean? How did you start thinking about it? And when did you start observing what it means to be human?
Well, it's funny. There's two answers to that. I thought when we interviewed Dan Gilbert last year, who wrote Stumbling on Happiness, a book I referred to often, I referred to in this book. But one of the things he said in the book was, every psychologist who writes a book at the very end makes an observation about what it means to be human. And I thought, well, like, if that's the payoff, why wait till the end? Life is short, you know? So I thought, why don't I write a book about it? But the genesis of this book begins right after my accident in 79. And I laid there in my hospital bed, and I looked different than all other humans, and I felt different, and everyone looked at me differently than they had. Even my loved ones, just that look in their eye was different than before. And I wondered, I mean, I'm watching all these humans, and before I was one of them. And now I can't survive without wheelchairs and catheters and pills and nurses. And what does that mean in terms of my humanity? Am I still one of them? Everything about me was different after the accident. And I wondered, I was anguished and I was terrified at the possibility that I was no longer fully part of my species. So I guess out of that anguish and terror, I just began to observe. You know that judge we talk about a lot, you know, how we judge ourselves and judge people, that, you know, that's good, he's passive-aggressive, that's bad, and so on and so forth. That judge in my head just stopped at that point, and I didn't judge. I just observed humans being human.
Do you feel almost as if you were a foreign correspondent at times?
Yeah, and that was the working title of the book. The working title of the book was Letters from a Foreign Correspondent. I did feel like a foreign correspondent. Do I now? No. I still feel the way I did before, that there's something about me that is fundamentally different than others. And I think because of that, I feel exquisitely human.
You observed a lot about people's anxiety, especially in those first days, months after your accident. And you write in your book how people were so very anxious to be around you. And that was a big observation, how anxious humans are. How did you see people express that anxiety, especially when it came to be around you in this new situation in your life?
Well, by funny coincidence, Mike, in my article in today's Inquirer, touched on that. And it's funny, I'm just realizing this for the first time, that they really are similar. I told the story in the Inquirer, the story I tell so often about the woman at the Hahnemann Hospital lobby. I was sitting there waiting to meet a colleague, and she put a dollar in my mug when I was drinking a cup of coffee. That was anxiety. She acted out of anxiety. And not to fault her, but that's what we do when we see something that is, quote, different in our brains, our primordial brains, we react. We react with anxiety because we don't know instinctively if it's a threat. So I was different, and people reacted out of anxiety. And what I noticed in the book is they did one of a few things with their anxiety, and this is that silent observer in me. They would either deny their anxiety and talk fast or say dumb things about why I shouldn't be depressed or why I should be happy. So they would deny their anxiety. Some people weren't anxious at all with me. They were able to look in my eyes and go immediately beyond my difference to what we had in common. And some people, when they were anxious, talked about their anxiety and their distress. And when people were anxious with me and didn't talk about it, pretended they weren't, it made me feel alone, anxious, alienated. It hurt me badly. It reinforced all my fears that maybe I'm not one of them anymore.
Has that changed? Are you able to deal with people's anxiety differently today?
Yeah, very much so. When I'm with somebody who is anxious, more often than not, my heart opens rather than closes, and I feel compassion and tenderness. And if the anxiety is overwhelming, then my instinct now is to do the opposite. If I'm with somebody who's anxious, my voice will get slower and softer, and my focus will become more about what's happening right here and right now between us rather than the issues the other person's anxious about. Why, you know, when we talked about this before the show, I began to wonder about why. What's the change over these 28 years? Why I was so reactive to people's anxiety then, and I'm not so reactive now. And I think the difference is back then I didn't have a center in me. I mean, I had no core. I didn't know who I was, what I was. I was terrified myself all the time. And now I think over these years I have more of a center from which to operate. You know, there's a me in there, you know, so I'm less willowy, less reactive to other people's emotions.
We're talking with Dan Gottlieb about his book, Learning from the Heart, Lessons on Living, Loving, and Listening. And if you want to call in with a question for Dan, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Again, that number is 1-888-477-9499. Call in with a question for Dan. Dan, I want to switch gears.
Can I also call in with a question for you, too?
Sure. I doubt that I'll have anything interesting to say, but I'll try. Here's the thing. I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about love, because after your introductory chapter, your first chapter is about love. And you say in that chapter that sometimes your whole being is love. You don't have to think about, do I love this person or what's happening with this person? It just is there. When does that happen?
When does it happen? I wrote a paragraph about that in that first chapter, which I think comes from the deepest part of my heart of any paragraph I have written in the whole book. When does it happen? It happens when you're not expecting it. It happens when you're not hungry or grasping or looking for love, or when you're not in touch with your pain. It happens when you know that everything that is precious in your life is temporary, that what you have right now is so fragile, that when you realize that everything you want and need in your life, you have with you right now. And there's just some times when I feel like my body can't contain my gratitude that I feel for fill in the blank, anything, everything. And that is love.
So often, though, our love, whether it's for a child or a partner or a friend, a family member, the love gets tainted with frustration, with anger, with anxiety, with us worrying what's going to happen to that person. And it's so hard to hold on to that pure feeling that you just described.
It's not hard to hold on to it. It's impossible is what it is. I don't know. I think about kids and the love we feel for our children when they're first born. And I talked in the book about how quickly that love is tainted with, as you said, worry about the child. But some of that's adaptive. You know, we need to worry about these little things or else, you know, they wouldn't survive very long. I think the opposite of anxiety, I think the opposite of anxiety is faith. And I think anxiety robs faith. I think faith cures anxiety. And faith in the literal sense, not necessarily faith in a God or a higher power or divinity, just a sense of faith in those we love, in our own resilience, faith in the human spirit. And I think when it comes to loving, what we need to aim for is what we need to aim for with everything, is balance. You know, we worry about our child, and we need faith at the same time that they have what they need to solve their problems, that they have a human spirit that's resilient, that they'll be okay if they run into injury, with very few exceptions.
Is there any way, I know you're not in the self-help business per se, but is there any way you can stop that hamster wheel that goes in your brain when you truly care about somebody and then all of a sudden you feel anxious and then you think, oh, and if they don't do this, then this is going to happen and then this is going to happen and they never did this and 2 years ago he never did this anyway. How can you stop that and remind yourself of, I do love this person?
Three words.
What's that?
Love the hamster.
What?
You said how to stop the hamster wheel in your head.
Right.
Love the hamster.
The hamster is me.
A hamster ain't going to go away. I mean, right. That wheel's going to be in there. And, you know, I practice meditation. That might not have been the most brilliant thing I ever said, but let me think it through. Let me see if I can find some logic here. You know, I practice mindfulness meditation, and one of the things we want to do is simply to be able to observe the wheel, observe your mind, observe that hamster is going around, but not be part of it. The fact that you've got a hamster in your head running around doesn't mean that has to be you running around. You know, so learn to love the hamster because it's going to be your companion for a long, long time.
But the hamster is not me.
It's a part of you.
Part of me,
the hamster
right.
is a part of
but it doesn't control me necessarily.
No, that's, your relationship with your hamster can change. This metaphor is starting to get a little bizarre.
All right. Okay. You know what? Let's take a short break. We're talking to Dan Gottlieb about his book, Learning from the Heart. And right now, let's turn things over to Pledge Central because it is our membership drive and we do need to hear from you to make this wonderful show possible. So let's see if we have Susan Polinko in membership Pledge Central.
Yes, you do, Mike. And I am Susan Polinko here listening to Dr. Dan and Mike and talk about the hamster and the hamster wheel. And in my family, we have a word for that. It's called gerbilizing over something. And if you have a tendency to think about things too much or obsess over things, Dr. Dan is your man. He is the one who can break it down for you. He is the one who can help you get in touch with your feelings and understand your own anxieties. And he is a unique voice on WHYY, the likes of which you will not hear anywhere else. If you listen to Dr. Dan, if you value Dr. Dan, the number to call to show your support is 1-888-345-9499, or you can go online at whyy.org.
And of course, you know, if you call in with your pledge of support right now, you could get your own copy of Dr. Dan's book, Learning from the Heart. Or, as you might have heard, we recently did a TV program with Dr. Dan, which was based on Learning from the Heart. And if you want to receive a copy of that DVD, pledge at the $120 level, and we'll be glad to send that to you. We hear from so many of you out there in the community every week who say, I love Dr. Dan, and they describe these moments that I always call Susan Dr. Dan moments, where they say, you know, I was listening to that show, and all of a sudden, click, something happened, or I realized something, or I had one of those moments where I had a profound just change in my thinking. So if you've ever had a Dr. Dan moment, give us a call right now at 1-888-345-9499, because membership and WHYY programming starts with you.
And a wonderful way to celebrate with up-and-coming Mother's Day or Father's Day would be to give the gift of membership and get the Learning from the Heart hardback book. Give it as a gift at the $100 level. That's 1-888-345-9499. I know I have plans to give Learning from the Heart to my mother for Mother's Day and my mother-in-law, not to be ignored, mother-in-law also. And if you have a mother in your life that you would like to have a delayed gift given to her, or a father that you'd like to value with upcoming Father's Day, or a graduate coming up, it's a great way to start your life after you finish college, Learning from the Heart. A good way to set you in good stead for your education as it begins, because, you know, it all starts when you leave school.
At any stage of life, this is a wonderful book with so many great stories, so many wonderful insights, and all written in that voice of Dr. Dan that is so compassionate, so kind, so much humor in there as well. So that's why we love our Dr. Dan. Give us a call now, 1-888-345-9499, or you can pledge online at whyy.org. Dr. Dan has been with WHYY for over 20 years now. And if you think about public broadcasting, Susan, one of the things I love about it is the fact that these programs have longevity.
Yes.
We stick with them because you stick with them as well. People like you call in with their membership pledge, and that means, hey, people want to listen to the show, and we're going to bring it to you year after year. So that's just one more wonderful thing about public broadcasting.
It's true. We nurture these kinds of programs. Voices in the Family is an original program that comes to you weekly. If you like and listen to Voices in the Family, show your support. 1-888-345-9499. That's 1-888-345-9499. Or you can go online at whyy.org. Get Learning from the Heart, the DVD at $120, or the hardback book at $100. Make a pledge. Thank you.
Are you concerned about a loved one who is using drugs or drinking too much? You may be eligible to participate in research conducted by the Treatment Research Institute. As part of the study, you'll be asked to attend up to 14 sessions with a family trainer and will be compensated for completing questionnaires on a weekly and monthly basis. For details, 877-I-WORRY-2, 877-496-7792. The Family Training Program supports WHYY.
And welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Mike and Scott, sitting in for Dan Gottlieb today, because Dan is actually our guest, talking about his new book, Learning from the Heart. Dan, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I don't
You invited yourself. It's been a pleasure so far. Before our break, we were talking about love. We talked about relationship. And I now want to talk about children. But before we get to that, let's take a call at 1-888-477-9499. Let's hear from Jay. Jay?
Hi, good afternoon, Dan. Good afternoon, Mike. And
hey, Jay.
I'm disabled. I use a wheelchair. I can walk and I can stand, but only for very brief periods. And I've been like this for 4 years. And my question is this. I pick up on all this anxiety. I want to know what I can do to allay the anxiety of my friends and my family about who I am now as a disabled person.
Well, I'm not so sure I've got a great answer. Let's think it through. But I'll tell you, Jay, that's exactly the right question, is how can you help them with their anxiety? How does it manifest itself?
Sometimes it's being overly protective if we're out somewhere. And, for example, if I'm up on my crutches, everybody will be saying, you know, watch out for that break in the sidewalk, or, you know, watch out for that door jam, or that kind of thing. And sometimes it's just, and I know you'll understand this, it's just a look of pity.
Yeah.
As if something really tragic has happened to me.
Well, apparently something really tragic has happened to you. The look of pity certainly doesn't help. but sometimes that look of pity comes from their own helplessness. I got to tell you, Jay, that look that you're referring to that breaks your heart, I got that look from my parents almost from the day of my accident until they died, which is 20 years plus after my accident. And I don't know if it was so much pity, but it was grief. And at first, it angered me because they weren't seeing my progress, they weren't seeing my achievements. But after I developed that center that I referred to earlier, and after I felt more whole, I could see that it was grief, that they were in anguish. And that's a completely different issue than the people around you who have their own anxiety when you're on crutches and anxiety about your falling. And, you know, you could be straight with them and just say, you know, I appreciate your anxiety, and if I was in your position, I'd probably have it too. Mm. But it makes things worse for me. It makes me more vigilant about myself and more self-conscious, and you just have to trust me a little bit.
Yeah, you've cleared up some mystery for me about sometimes why I get strange reactions. When I was first released from the hospital, I was in Phoenix at a conference, and I was in a wheelchair, and somebody didn't see me, walked into me.
Yeah.
And started yelling at me.
What?
You started yelling.
I was so taken aback, I had no idea what to say.
Yeah, well, it's not much to say in a case like that. You get strange reactions because we're a strange species. I mean, our assumption that we are the superior species always intrigues me.
And yeah. Jay, if I may add something, having known Dan for so many years, I would also, having known and loved Dan for so many years, I also want to add that, you know, sometimes what you may think is pity is compassion. Because when I'm with Dan and I see he's struggling with something, you know, I don't feel pity, I feel compassion, because I know he's having a hard time, but I would feel the same compassion for anybody else in a wheelchair or not. And the other thing that has been really helpful to me in working with Dan and being a friend to Dan is that I know that he will ask me for help when he needs it. And he freely does so. He'll say, hey, can you get me a cup of tea? Can you get me a cup of water? Can you cut my steak for me? But I know when he doesn't want help, he won't say anything, and then I won't offer it until I notice, you know, I may be helpful. But to me, it's also been very helpful that I know that when he needs help, he is not shy about asking for it. And I think when you establish that with the people who love you and you love, that makes it easier for them because they know you feel comfortable asking for help, and they can then in turn feel comfortable giving the help without feeling that they have to read you and not step mm-hmm. in.
And yeah. What we talked about earlier is it's all about relationship. It's all about navigating
right.
these waters. I'm pretty sure I quoted Sheldon Kopp in this book, who's was a psychoanalyst in Washington. He said about love, he said the most difficult part of love is managing your own helplessness in the face of a loved one suffering.
Yeah, one of the things I still struggle with, I think, is not asking for help. I feel very confident about asking for help when I need it, but it's accepting help when I don't. And there are times when I realize, especially with people I'm close to, they need to help me more than I need to be independent.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I will just sometimes say, yeah, go ahead.
Well, good for you. Good for you. You sound like you've done an awful lot of work. When I had my accident 4 years, I was far from done my grieving at that point.
Yeah, I think when you're my age, I'm just turned 65.
Yeah.
You have a different view of the world.
Yeah.
I've lived longer. I've had my share of pain long before I became disabled.
Yeah, and that's what happens if we're lucky as we get older. You know, we see the world in a larger context in our history. We're able to use our history to help us. Jay, thanks so much for your call. Interesting discussion.
Thank you, Jay. And if you have a question for Dan, call us at 1-888-477-9499. And Dan, you've either quoted or said that, speaking of this conversation with Jay, that we're born square and we die round. And I think there is a truth to that. As we get older, we get softer. we become more centered. Have you experienced that?
Certainly I've gotten more round as as I've aged. I have gotten softer. I have found that I love easier, and the more I love, the more I love. As my life feels more fragile, I feel more open and more gentle, and I still have a hamster in there. But, you know, after all these years, it's like I said earlier, you know, that hamster's a buddy of mine. He no longer threatens me, but, you know, every now and then he needs to get up and do some exercise. So, you know, I mean, I'm still neurotic, but, you know, just my spirit feels richer, feels whole, it's at peace.
I want to take one more phone call at 1-888-477-9499. We have Olivia on the line. Hello?
Hi, Dr. Dan. I was in a serious car accident when I was 19, and I'm now 57, and I've been lately working on really feeling gratitude around the gifts in my life as a result of that. And I'm actually involved in a book series called Thank God I, where I'm writing about that. And I guess seeing how you have become just this amazing healer and voice for people and have really seemed to have a gift for this, I wondered if you could go back and change the past, would you want to, or would you want to undo what happened given your life now?
This is going to be a weird answer, Olivia. When I look back on my past, the only thing I would want to change was when I sent my daughters to overnight camp in the summer when they didn't want to go, and we sent them almost against their will because my wife really needed respite. It was right after my accident. That is the only thing I would change in my life when I look back. I'm not thrilled. I'm a quadriplegic. I'm not thrilled my sister and my parents and my wife have all passed away. But I am thrilled with the life I have right now, this moment, and who knows what contributed to it? Who knows what played into it? I don't think I'm a different person as a result of what's happened to me. I do feel that I've become the person I could have been as a result of what's happened to me. What I had deep down inside my heart when I was a child, I don't think ever would have come out if I didn't realize all these traumas and this hopelessness. I think it would have stayed in there. And in that regard, the fact that it came out, I'm fortunate. I don't recommend this path as a way of finding peace inside yourself. There's other ways. But thanks for your call, and thanks for the question it brings up. It's a challenging question.
It's a tough question. And Dan, you mentioned Daniel Gilbert's book earlier, which was called Stumbling on Happiness. And it talks about the fact that we're so bad at knowing what will make us happy, yet we spend so much time obsessing over what will make us happy. And I think your story illustrates that better than any story I've ever heard. You're a happy man.
Yeah, we don't. We're clueless about what will make us happy, and we're also clueless about what will make us miserable. I mean, we spend our lives trying to avoid those things we think will make us miserable, like not getting more income or not losing the weight, or what if, God forbid, our child doesn't get into the right college, or maybe not into any college. And we just assume that all that stuff is going to make us miserable. And we're wrong more often than we're right. You know, we learn things from that. We grow from that. We evolve. We become deeper and wiser. So we think we know a lot about the future, but we don't. I think I told you that I wanted to change the letters after my name on my business card from PhD to DNS.
What's that mean?
Don't know much. Exactly.
Can't say that on the radio. Dan Gottlieb, DNS. All right, well, let's talk about children, because much of your work has been in recent years about children. All the proceeds from your books go to children's charity. What worries you, what concerns you about children in today's world?
Well, let me start with today's world. I want tomorrow's world to be more compassionate than today's world. I want tomorrow's world to be less selfish, less anxious, less insecure than today's world. I want tomorrow's world to be a world where we look at one another and see our similarities and not our differences. So my first concern is the world that our children are growing up in today and tomorrow's children are going to grow up in. I want that for Sam, for my grandson, for all the Sams in the world. I want the world to be kinder. I want it to be filled with more love. And I think that is my responsibility to make that happen. I think it's yours. I think it's all of us as adults to make that happen, to make this world a more loving place, to make the world the kind of place we want our children to live in. And I think we have to do whatever we can to do that, all of us. And we have to start right now, and we've got to do it tenaciously and daily. I think that's our responsibility as adults. And I think part of that responsibility, and I'm not just talking about self-sacrifice, I think there's way too much self-sacrifice already in this world. One of the things I'm concerned about is our children don't have role models. Well, they have role models for partying on TV, and at home they've got role models for self-sacrifice, and they've got role models for tenacity and achievement, and they've got role models for worry. But they don't have role models for true joy, true happiness, and contentment. And we have to do that. That's our responsibility to our children, is to role model happiness and contentment, to role model intimacy and openness, to role model being comfortable with your own vulnerability and tenderness, to role model true love, not just romantic love, but true love, and to be role models. And to role model love does not mean being indulgent with your child. You know, it means to love who you love from your heart, like I said earlier, with faith. So we have a lot we have to do, we adults, and we can do it every day, starting today.
And we'll talk more about the how in just a minute. But right now, let's check in with Pledge Central and Susan Palinko.
And I am here, Mike, and thank you very much, listening to Voices in the Family. And while Dan and Mike can explore the why and the important questions of life, we're exploring also the why you should become a member and show your support for Dan. We feel we have very compelling arguments for membership here at WHYY, and Dr. Dan is really right up there. So give a call, show your support for Dr. Dan and Voices in the Family. The number to call is 1-888-345-9499, or you can go online at whyy.org. Learning from the Heart, the DVD, is available for a pledge of membership at the $120 level. That's just $10 a month. If you would like the hardback book, Learning from the Heart, that is also available at the $100 level. And if you would like both the hardback book of Dr. Dan's Learning from the Heart and his paperback version of Voices in the Family, that is available for a pledge of $180. The important thing is that you show your support for Dr. Dan and Voices in the Family. It's a unique program that's been nurtured here at WHYY for 20 years. That in and of itself is a huge accomplishment, and the kinds of conversations that Mike and Dan bring to radio are mind-boggling.
Thank you. Give us a call at 1-888-345-9499. And Susan, I think it's so important in this world of self-help mania, where everybody wants to do this better and faster and quicker and more efficiently, and 8 steps, 7 steps, 5 steps, it's enough to make your head spin.
Yes.
And not a lot of that kind of advice really works. And if you listen to Dan, you know it's not about how do I become quicker, faster, better, more efficient, thinner.
How do I lose 20 pounds?
Exactly. You know, is that going to make you happy? Probably not. It's probably going to make you feel more stressed, and it's not going to do much for you or your family. So this is the kind of advice that works, that makes you think about your life, that makes you appreciate what you already have. So if that's the kind of programming you want to support, give us a call now at 1-888-345-9499. We have a mini goal this hour of 20 people, and we've heard from 8 so far, so we need to hear from 12 more, and I believe that we can accomplish that, Susan.
I believe we can. I know that Dr. Dan is a huge resource here in the Delaware Valley. We have lots of people who have great appreciation for him. If you are one of those people, it's important that you call and show your pledge of support to Dr. Dan and Voices in the Family, 1-888-345-9499. Now, Mikan and Dan and I have the pleasure of being able to work with Mikan and Dan in a series that we do called In the Spirit of Family. And coming up on Thursday, June 12th, we're going to have a panel discussion here at WHYY on families and adoption. And these are the kinds of ways in which radio and program and service areas and outreach all come together.
All interact.
And we're 5 years into this In the Spirit of Family, and it's a wonderful collaboration. So if you can come and show up Thursday, June 12th, if you have any interest in adoption, give us a ring, 1-888-345-9499. Mikan and Dan work tirelessly to bring excellent programming to you that makes a difference, and they do it very well. 1-888-345-9499.
Give us a call now. We've heard from 11 people, so that means we need to hear from 9 more. And we really want to make this goal. Get your own copy of Learning from the Heart on DVD. This was a program that we produced here at WHYY. Or get the copy of the book.
Yes, and you can get the Learning from the Heart, the copy of the book, for a pledge of $100. Or you can get Learning from the Heart, the DVD, for a pledge of $120. That's just $10 a month. The number to call is 1-888-345-9499, or you can go online at whyy.org. If you're a dedicated fan of Dr. Dan, or if you're who we call a Daniac, we have a great appreciation for you, but it's important that you show your support for Voices in the Family. Thank you very much.
And welcome back to Voices in the Family. Hello, I'm Mike and Scott, sitting in for Dan. With Dan, we're talking about his book, Learning from the Heart. And Dan, before we took our break, you talked about how we can be better role models for our children, for joy, for loving, for all those wonderful things. But how do you do that?
Pay attention. You know, how we do things like that is the same way we get to Carnegie Hall. You know, practice. And we really do it by paying attention. We are well schooled at ignoring ourselves and ignoring our needs and even ignoring our lives. You know, I talked, one of my letters in Letters to Sam was about how one morning I woke up. I was in Atlantic City on vacation. And I went out on the balcony, and I was thinking about, you know, my work, and I was thinking about what I was going to do that day, and I was thinking about and thinking about and thinking about, and I didn't notice the smells, the ocean smell, and I didn't notice the waves breaking, and I didn't notice the sun on my face, and I didn't notice my life because I was so busy thinking. And that's what so many of us do with so much of our lives. All day, every day, we don't notice our lives. And if we could begin just there, just notice that we're breathing, just notice that we have this gift of breath, just take 15 seconds a few times a day and just check in and feel your breath go into your lungs and feel the temperature in your room and in the room and just feel your life. That's the beginning of finding out what your life is about, experiencing your life instead of racing through it or fighting against it.
If we want to stick with parenting for a minute, you write a lot about listening and the importance of listening. How can you be a better listener to your child as a parent? Or what does it mean to be a good listener?
I'm sorry, what did you say? Sorry, I couldn't help that. Let's first start talking about what interferes with listening. And, you know, one of my favorite stories about that I told in the book was when I was driving my two nieces somewhere, and there were Katie and Chelsea, and they were 11 and 4 sitting in the back of the van, and I hear in the back Chelsea says, "Uncle Danny, what does having sex mean? And, you know, I gulped, and I didn't want to answer the question. I thought, well, it's what two grown-ups do when they want to make a baby. So I just, okay, so that was fine. You know, we get by it and pull out. And a few minutes later, the older sister, Katie, says, "Uncle Danny, what are you talking about?" And I said, "What do you mean, Kate?" She said, "Chelsea wanted to know what heaven's sakes means."
For heaven's sakes.
Oh, my God. So, you know, I'm crimson red now. And Katie says to me, "Uncle Danny, what were you thinking anyway?" That's the point. I was thinking. And like that time at Atlantic City, you know, I was thinking too loud and I couldn't hear Chelsea. So we can take a look at the things that really interfere with our hearing. Thinking interferes with our hearing. Emotions interfere with our hearing. Our anxiety interferes with our hearing. If your child says something to you and it triggers anxiety, your hearing's going to stop at that point and you're going to react to hearing anxiety. You're going to be telling your child what to do or how to think or what not to do. But, you know, it's all these things that go on inside of us that interfere with our hearing. So what I would invite anyone who's in the listening position to do is when you listen, just notice how you are feeling. And that if you feel anxious, be anxious. If you feel frightened or insecure or bored, let yourself feel what you feel. Just notice what you feel. And if you feel too tired to really listen to the person, truly listen, just know that. And then don't listen. Be true to what's going on inside of you instead of pretending you're able to do something you can't do.
Let's get another phone call in at 1-888-477-9499. We have Michael on the line.
Hi, Dr. Dan.
Hey, Michael.
I'm calling because my beloved brother-in-law just received a diagnosis of certain death within a few months or a year or so, a rare blood disease. And he has a 9-year-old son and a loving wife, and none of us knows what to do to help him or, you know, how he can go about making the most of the time that he has left.
Well, you know, when we feel life is out of control, when I felt my life was out of control, what I really wanted was I wanted people to ask me what I needed, and that helped me feel more in control. So please ask him how you can help him and what he needs. At the same time, listen to what Mike and I have been talking about.
Yeah.
You have to be aware of what you need also. You're in grief and you're terrified, and he might need to know that and he might not need to know that. You know, sometimes it really helps when you can cry together, and sometimes it doesn't. You need to explore this with him. He's still the same man he was before this horrible diagnosis, and please don't ever, ever forget that. He's still the same person. Treat him as with that in mind, that he is the same person. Treat him like you did before this diagnosis and explore it with him. Find out what he needs. Tell him what you need. You know, be open, be intimate. Mourn together if need be.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you very much.
I'm so sorry for you. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for the family.
If I could just add, he has initially so far taken the approach that I think you were describing, which is that he has his life at this moment. That's all we ever really have.
Right.
And he's trying to just live his life as it is.
Moment by moment.
Yeah.
Well, then you know what he's become now. He's become a teacher, whether
yeah.
he wants to or not. And you have to be his student and learn about life from him. It would bring him honor, and it would be a gift for you.
Yes, and I'll just add one more thing. That we're all your student. I really appreciate you over these many years that I've listened.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Dan, I'm reminded, and Michael, I hope you're still listening, I'm reminded of a conversation you had with Jon Kabat-Zinn, the great teacher of mindfulness meditation. And the two of you spoke about a woman who only had a short period of time to live. But she said she didn't feel her time was limited because between that point A to point B, she had an infinite amount of moments in which she could be alive, in which she could love, in which she could be with her family. And all those moments that she was now, because of her time being so limited, she was now so aware of every one of those moments that she felt she had a long time. Because so many of us go through life missing all those moments, sadly.
And how many moments do we wish away on a rainy day, or wish away during the winter when we're wishing for spring? We wish away so many of our moments, and they, each one is so interesting and precious and potentially delicious. I greet each season truly, truly not knowing if it's my last. And it makes the colors more bright. It makes the air feel better in my lungs, despite my allergies.
But Dan, it's so hard. It's so hard, even being aware that life is precious and that life is limited. It's so hard to remind yourself when you're stuck in traffic and you're mad and you have too much work to do and then, you know, they don't have your bread at the grocery store. It's all ridiculous stuff. But when you're in that moment, man, that just makes you angry.
That's because you have a mind.
Right.
And all we can do is remind ourselves that there's another piece of reality going on right now. While we're mad about the bread in the grocery or the line, while we're mad, sometimes we can stop that for a moment and just notice where we are in this world. But we will never, ever not be upset when they don't have our bread. I think that's asking too much, you know, of the mind. We take our moments way too seriously, and that's just the way we are.
Let's talk a little bit about, again, you're not in the business of doing self-help, but you do give people some advice on how to enjoy your life more, on how to be more and worry less, and how to be more who you are rather than think about who you should be or what you should be and what you should have. And one thing you say, which is important in getting there, is hanging out. What does that mean?
Well, hanging out is what it sounds like. When I hear people, when I ask them how their day is going, they say they're hanging in. And people who are hanging in need to be hanging out. And hanging out is, everybody who ever was a child knows about hanging out. It's doing nothing. It's daydreaming. It's gardening. It's talking with people you care about things you don't care about. It's resting your brain and your mind and your body. It's about not being productive. And it's hard to do because we have developed so many habits of being productive, and being unproductive feels almost unnatural. It feels as though we're doing something wrong, we're violating something. But it's terribly important to be unproductive.
And to just hang out.
Just hang out. Don't do anything. Yeah, be unproductive.
Another thing that you talk about that's very important with parents and families is another very important thing in life, have dinner.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the research is amazing on the impact of dinner. There was a study done years ago with, I think it was Big Brothers, Big Sisters, that showed kids who had dinner on the average of 3 times a week, 3 to 4 times a week, had like a 60%, 70% less chance of using drugs and alcohol when they grew up, much less chance of hanging out with kids who use drugs and alcohol. Infants who have dinner with their families speak at a younger age, regardless of what gets talked about at the table. So it doesn't matter what you eat or what you talk about, but just be with your family, you know, 3 to 4 times a week. And we think, you know, schlepping kids around to lessons here and there on soccer games, and that's going to help our children become better, when it's just the opposite. Hanging out with your kids and having dinner 3 or 4 times a week for a full hour, thank you, will make a tremendous impact on your child's life and yours.
So, Dan, breathe, hang out, have dinner, and remember to enjoy your life. I think that will sum it up.
Yeah, one other thing. Please don't take yourself too seriously.
Won't do it. Dan, thank you so much for being with us today, and thank you for talking about your book.
I'll come back every time you invite me.
All right. And now, with that being said, let's check in with Susan Polinko in Pledge Central. Susan?
And we are here listening to Mike and Dan in their interview, and you are listening to Voices in the Family. And if this kind of program, listening to Dan, give you excellent advice about how to take life with a grain of salt, don't take yourself too seriously, those kinds of things that often you need to be reminded of, those kinds of things are important to you, and you value this kind of programming, make a show of support and give us a call, 1-888-345-9499. At the $120 level, that's just $10 a month, we have the Learning from the Heart DVD. That is a 1 hour running time, and there are some bonus features on that. That is an excellent way to celebrate Dr. Dan. And we also have, at the $100 level, the Learning from the Heart hardback cover of Learning from the Heart, Lessons on Living, Loving, and Listening.
Give us a call at 1-888-345-9499. And for that program, the TV program, Learning from the Heart, we brought back some of our most precious and wonderful guests. For example, there's an interview on there with Gerda Weissman-Klein, who is a Holocaust survivor. There's a wonderful interview on there with a woman named Andrea Collins-Smith, who has breast cancer and is trying to survive. She's a mother. It's just one of the best interviews I think Dan has ever done. So please, do get your own copy, and of course, all of Dan's wonderful advice. 1-888-345-9499. We need to hear from 7 more people, Susan,
yep,
to make our goal during this hour. 1-888-345-9499, or go online at whyy.org. And Susan, I want to mention one thing. You know, Dan does a lot of things for this station to reach out to,
yep,
people, to make sure we talk about things that are important. And on May 13th, we're actually hosting a series of discussions on the topic of depression, because there's a show coming out, PBS documentary called Depression Out of the Shadows. And on Tuesday, May 13th at 5:30, Dan will be here hosting a panel discussion about depression. So please, if you want to come to that, go to whyy.org. And as you know, all of this comes together, the things we do with our In the Spirit of Family